Well, everybody, there's a lot of people on this call, so just to let everybody know, we've muted everyone's line on the call, but we will have some contact information after this call where you can send in questions, where you can contact the speakers. So be sure to write down your questions. We don't want you to forget them. We just have too many people on the call to be able to handle kind of interactive setting. So welcome, everybody, to our June teleseminar. Today we have a special treat with Phil Tesoriero. He's been in real estate since 1989. He's currently an active broker and owner, which is great. A lot of times we have presenters that are not currently doing real estate in our current market, but he's got a lot of insight into what's going on because he is a current active broker, owner of Exceptional Homes Real Estate, an independent brokerage. Early in Phil's career, he mastered negotiating short sales with lending institutions and has since consulted short sale departments for several major franchises all across the country. He is one of 8 short sale speakers listed with the National Association of Realtors and has consulted NAR on their short sale certification program. He teaches LCE courses, he trains, he coaches, and he's spoken to large and small audiences all across the country, including Triple Play in Michigan. More. So with the launch of our new pre-foreclosure product, we reached out to and wanted him as a guest speaker on the teleseminar. Phil, are you with us?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Eric Wind. I'm just going to be interviewing Phil today, taking him through today's call where he's going to be talking about everything related to short sales and default real estate. Good afternoon, Phil.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Phil, why don't we get started with just telling us a little bit about how you got started in real estate, specifically dealing with default real estate.
Well, the way I got started was me and my brother, I was 18, my brother's a couple years older than I am, and we found a neighborhood property that was in a bit of distress, a little disrepair. We purchased it, and we eventually moved into it with a bunch of our buddies, kind of came off frat house. And we realized it was a great way to start making money on real estate. So we started going out, finding some more distressed properties and putting deals together. And that's just kind of was the beginning part of when I started investing. From there, I got involved in doing some contracting work, some construction contracting work, where I used to renovate my own properties. I spent time renovating other investors' properties. And then the eventuality was back in the end of 2001. I decided to get licensed and get on the other side of it, and I became a licensed real estate professional. From there, I opened up my own brokerage shortly thereafter, and even though, you know, when I first opened up my brokerage, there was a lot of great things going on in the real estate markets. It was pretty easy to sell a property as long as you could find somebody who wanted to sell a property. You basically could have sold it to anybody. People were jumping all over anything back then. Regardless, what really kind of got me going back then and always excited me more was dealing with the distressed transaction, with the people that had some sort of a foreclosure situation, because regardless of what's going on in the marketplace, there was always some percentage of the people who own properties who unfortunately will always be in foreclosure. I think we all know that as real estate professionals, everybody's always looking for a deal, and so was I, so I got out there. What I realized around 2004, I guess it was to just go out there and get the regular foreclosure deal wasn't as easy as it was, say, previous to that. So what I did was I kind of got on the other side of things, and what I did is I went to the lenders, and I started making offers on purchasing distressed notes. So I would actually go out and buy the mortgage myself and become the bank, in essence. So I kind of got on the other side of the short sale when I did that, because there were a lot of exit strategies and opportunities to make money if you were able to buy those notes at discounted rates. But that was an opportunity that I engaged in for a while, taught me a lot about the banking side of short sales. And before you know it, 2006 rolled around, and there we were on the brokerage side, finding ourselves doing more short sales that were a much different animal than they are today. But that's kind of what brought me down the road and kind of where I've been and what I've done with the short sales and continue to do today.
All right, well, Phil, let's just cut to this chase. These are historic, unprecedented times. Some examples of things we've been reading. Case-Shiller reported home prices recently hit a new low. CNBC, U.S. housing crisis is now worse than the Great Depression. J.P. Morgan predicts 4 to 5% further drop in home values. Zillow, 28% of all homes have negative equity. This is all bad news. Are we at the bottom? Is there any silver lining here?
No, I don't think there is, unfortunately. I don't think we're at the bottom. A lot of people are out there making predictions, and it's real easy to join the pack and make predictions. But my feeling is that you're going to find that the percentage Zillow had reported, that 28% of homeowners with a mortgage had negative equity. I believe you'll see that number grow dramatically. I've actually wrote an article that came out last week, and I've been quoted in a few different places where I've made the prediction of saying within the next 12 months, you'll see negative equity for homeowners in the United States grow to somewhere around 50% of the homeowners find that they're going to be underwater. That's not to say that they all have to sell. Unfortunately, the reality and the mental mindset is becoming that they want to sell. Nobody wants to hold on to what was once perceived as the golden egg laid by the golden goose, and that was once you purchased real estate, you were immediately wealthy a couple of years ago. It doesn't exist today, and there's been a psychology that's existed in the market that's making people feel they must sell. And it's creating its own downward pressure on the markets overall. And as inventory continues to climb, you're going to see prices continue to drop. They made it official and said we're in the double dip recession. I don't think we'll see the bottom of this market for at least 12 to 18 months. And even at that, we're going to hope for a few little tiny blips in a very flat line market, I think, for some time to come.
So we're going from Zillow's 28% of all homes being underwater to 50% of all homes underwater by 2012?
Yeah, I'm going to say that's going to be my conservative estimate. I firmly believe that 28% easily 50% by this time next year.
Okay. Well, forget about being out of the woods. I don't think we've even seen the woods yet. But I assume no one here on this call today wants to simply survive right now, and they don't want to wait for things to get better. We want to grow our business now. So any advice on how we could do that?
Well, I'm a big fan, obviously, of short sales. I know a lot of agents that are out there. I know there's a lot of people who are out there who shy away from doing short sales. They're afraid of the short sale. They don't want to have to engage in some of the insanity that they believe takes place around short sales. But for the agents who think that they could stay away from it, I think they're going to realize that the reality is that if they stay away from the short sale itself, that their business will kind of float away and just go away. Short sales are no longer these utilities that takes place at the lower end of the market. Short sales are against every single part of the market. I have $1.9 million short sales. I have a $1.8 million short sale. As well, I'm working on a $105,000 short sale. So they're in all the spectrums of the marketplace. And it's just something that I take as a core of my business, and we'll talk a little bit more about later on why I take it as a core of my business, because and how it feeds the rest of my business. But it's actually this nightmare that we're all living through is actually a huge opportunity for people who are in the real estate industry.
So we need to stop accepting short sale listings or stop avoiding them, and I guess we need to start pursuing short sale listings.
Without a doubt. I think the agents who begin to pursue short sale listings will find themselves looking back. I keep saying we're going to be looking at this as the good old days at some point in time. There were the agents who were looking at 2005 and 2004 as the good old days because all they needed was a listing and somebody with a pulse to come in and get a loan. I think that the opportunity that sits in front of us right now is even greater than when the market was booming along. I think the fact that we have kind of secured commissions in our short sales, which I know that's a big statement to say. I know a lot of people disagree with that, but we'll talk about that in a little while as well. But our commissions are secure. There is definitely some more work to be done. There's a little bit of heavy lifting, but if approached correctly, all that heavy lifting turns into a very simple process, and you find yourself closing more transactions. The short sale to me isn't the challenge. The challenge comes on the other side, which is kind of part of the whole problem we're encountering right now, and that's the banks making the loans back on the other side, on the retail side, for the purchases to be made. The short sale to me is a challenge. It's a huge, great opportunity.
All right, Phil. So then in that case, then, let's talk about how we help people who are in foreclosure, who are facing a potential short sale. Who is a good short sale prospect?
Well, like anything else, you want to qualify the clients that you're going to work with. If it was a regular listing, all we'd really be concerned with would be their motivation and why they want to sell, in fact. In a short sale, there's a couple other things that have to be considered. The first thing that I absolutely positively have to make sure of is the fact that I want to make sure that what the bank would refer to as the unpaid balance, in other words, the amount of money still owed on that mortgage, has got to be greater than the actual market value of the property. And market value is the key. So unpaid balance is greater than market value. The next factor that I look for when I'm qualifying a good short sale prospect, or a good short sale client for that matter, is that they are experiencing a hardship. And a hardship exists in their life that has affected their income stream. This hardship should be relative to the inability to actually make payments on their mortgage. So at this point, we have three factors. The unpaid balance is greater than market value. They're experiencing an existing hardship, which they hopefully will be able to document. And this hardship is relative to their inability to pay their mortgage. Once I have all this, my next question to the homeowner is going to be if they've attempted a loan modification. Many of the standards that are out there now, the rules, the guidelines, whatever you want to call them, they all kind of require that a loan modification had been attempted, or at least the application had been sent in, regardless of whether or not the homeowner actually wants to modify the loan. So part of that application will simply state that you're applying for the loan mod, but you still actually want to sell your home. So those four factors are the four basic factors that I look for in qualifying a short sale client. And again, just the same again, so you get them out there, is number one would be the unpaid balance is greater than market value. There's an existing hardship that's relative to number three, their inability to pay the mortgage. And number four, that they have failed a loan modification, or at least have attempted or sent application for a loan modification.
So, Phil, what if they haven't gone through the loan modification process? Yeah, where do you direct them?
Well, that depends on a couple of things. One of my primary questions in speaking to someone who's looking to sell their home and we see that they're experiencing some financial challenges, one of the first questions I'll always ask them is if, in fact, they want to keep their home. I've actually made a marketing campaign out of telling folks I don't only sell homes, I can help you save them. And I've never had a problem with assisting as a free service to do a loan modification with a homeowner who was in distress and actually had the desire to try to stay in the home.
So you'll work with them to do their own loan modification?
Yeah, absolutely. I won't take the loan modification on per se, but what I will do is I will help them prepare all the documents. I'll even kind of go through the cursory pre-approval, pre-qualification of that to see if they're going to qualify along with many of the bank standards. I have an NPV formula that I use, and I have been able to tell people, give them a little insight as to whether or not they will be approved or if it's not looking good. The real benefit to this is the benefit to the homeowner is simply sometimes when we know a homeowner can't afford a home, the mortgage itself, this helps them get down the road of understanding that in a little bit more depth. We know that the purchase and sale of the property for the people who are living in it is a very, very, very emotional thing. It's an emotional decision. So sometimes letting them do the loan modification, hearing it from the lender that they're not qualified to modify their loan, is a big deal and takes you a long way. So many of my loan modification clients, the people that I'm helping for free, many of them often in very short time frames turn into actual short sale listings as well. So, you know, it's kind of a powerful service to offer. It puts you in a great position to help some people build that referral network within your community. And I have a lot of people in my neighborhood who actually are very grateful for the fact that we have done successful loan modifications. These people have sent me numerous buyer referrals as well as seller referrals. Not all my seller referrals are short sales either. I have regular sellers out there that are just looking to sell their properties.
So just to make sure I understand, so you're doing these loan modifications free of charge.
That's correct.
And I guess that makes sense because, as you said, the majority of these loan modifications are unfortunately not going to work out.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. And one of the ways that I first realized that doing loan modifications made all the sense in the world, well, there's a couple of things. A, I started doing loan modifications back in 2002. It was one of the first default real estate transactions I encountered. The fee that I charged that person was $1,500. I have not yet received a penny of that $1,500 because my perception of loan modifications, for the most part, is it's a broken product, and I never want to sell something to somebody that I know is broken. In the cases where I have helped people do loan mods and they've been successful, I just think it's wonderful to see that these people are flourishing once again and able to rebuild their lives. And again, they become wonderful resources. I know a lot of real estate people who have challenged me and said that that's something that they would never do for free. Well, that just helps me decide it's an even better idea at that point in time. So, you know.
Okay. So what happens then when, you know, when this loan modification does fail, like so many of them do? What's the next thing you do?
Well, you know, I offer a loan modification for free. This brings people into my office to start the flow of the business cycle. The next part of it is if I actually successfully modify somebody's loan, they become tremendous referral people for me. These are the people that they're staying in my area. They're not going to move 1,000 miles away. And you know, we're up in New York, so a lot of people have a tendency to they want to move down to the Carolinas or to Florida after they decide they're going to leave New York or wherever that might be that they're going to go. So I always say that. The person who moves away, even when you do a wonderful job and they move 1,000 miles away, it's very hard for me to get that referral back. But the people who I help stay in the neighborhood and who have successfully modified their loan, they're wonderful referral resources. I'm going to say somewhere around, 90 to 95% of these failed loan modifications are going to turn into listings. These are usually proactive people. They're usually the people who are looking to resolve it. They're not the people who just threw their hands up or had some other quote-unquote scam up their sleeve and when they were modifying. They're usually proactive, so the reality is about 90 to 95% of them will become listings. I can't lie to you and tell you that I get every one of those listings back. There are some people that where their pride gets in the way, but the reality is it's generating that activity. So the vast majority will turn back into be listings of some nature.
So we're getting our short sale listings by helping these people with these loan modifications. Unfortunately, as you said, so many of them are going to fail, and that is your next source of your next listing.
Pretty much. I mean, that's one of the avenues that I travel in my marketing of getting more short sale listings. That's just one angle. There's many other angles we kind of use, but that just happens to be one facet of the way we market for short sales listings.
All right. So and you touched upon this, but what additional opportunities result from having these short listings now?
Well, this is the really wonderful part. I don't know how it is in a lot of other offices, but in my office, I generally start my newer agents out working with buyers. It's an easier process to educate them on. Where do my buyers come from, especially in a market like this? Well, as I mentioned earlier, when I'm selling short sales, I'm selling them at a number that's relative to market value. Now, that seems like a very simple statement to make, but the reality about market value nowadays, relative to so many of the other listings that are on, at least I know on my MLS system and many of the other MLS systems from the agents that I speak to around the country, that market value sale turns out to be so much lower than so many of the other listed properties in the area. So what's happening is my short sale is going to generate a larger list of potential buyers, of which we've been averaging somewhere between 3 to 5 additional purchase contracts where we have buyers coming in, and we wind up showing them other properties and selling them other properties. I had a new agent came into the brokerage about, 6-7 months ago, and within the first 3 months had 5 contracts signed. So that's a pretty powerful thing. All those buyers basically had rolled off of 2 particular short sale listings that I had, and he, as a new agent, was able to convert these people into contracts. So, you know, If I had some visuals up on the screen right now, I'd be able to show you that there's a bit of a multiplier here where that short sale listing, I've been quoted many places as well saying that I believe short sales are an answer to a very tremendous and growing problem we have in this country. Part of that answer is the fact that buyers are out there and buyers are willing to buy. They just want to pay the right price. They want to pay market price right now, or at least have that perceived value that they're getting it. And short sales is something that has afforded my company the opportunity to contact more buyers, to touch more buyers, show them more properties, and sell more properties.
Well, that's terrific. And clearly, you and hopefully a lot of us out here have a lot of success with short sales. But I sometimes hear realtors saying that they don't get paid on a short sale or their commission has been reduced. Why is that?
My guess as to why that is, very simply, is I have a feeling that it's the commission wasn't necessarily reduced by whom they think it was reduced by. I know most agents that I've been speaking to lately, when their commissions are getting cut, the next question I'll ask them is, who negotiated your short sale? And as they stare at me as if, well, what are you talking about? Look, I said, well, it was either a lawyer who negotiated it. It was probably some sort of a fixed fee or a fixed payment third-party negotiator. Who did you negotiate it? Now, you know, in my market where I am, and I know there's a lot of people from different parts of the country out there, but the average sales price around here, I'm going to say, is somewhere in the 200s. Let's use $200,000 as an average sales price. Right now, based upon what the Treasury Department tells us, based upon what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac tell us, and the concepts that have been adopted by all the other lenders that are out there, even on their own programs that they have in-house, on most short sale transactions that the sales price is less than $729,750, they're paying 6%, and they're not negotiating that fee as a term of approving the transaction. So what winds up happening is they tell us they're going to pay us our 6%. When we send in the HUD-1 as part of the proposal, we put down 6%. When you let a lawyer or some other third party who knows they're getting paid regardless of what your check is going to get cut for, you got to realize on a $200,000 transaction with a 6% commission, you're talking about a $12,000 pool of money that when an extra $8,000 has to be pulled out, that $12,000 is a very easy place for it to be pulled. You see, most lenders, when they're approving transactions nowadays, what they're approving is a net number. And what they're saying is that the maximum commission would have been, in that case, $12,000. Lawyer fees will be X number of dollars. And the net to the lender has to be X. They won't necessarily negotiate your commission, but there might have to be an extra, just say, $3,000 that has to be come up with. Well, when I'm fighting and I'm doing my own negotiating, you better believe I'm protecting every dollar that I have out there on the table, and I'm working hard for every dollar, as I know most agents who are negotiating short sales themselves are. If you're going to leave it in the hands of a lawyer or a third-party negotiator, well, you got to understand you're also leaving the opportunity for these people to negotiate the deal and get it closed. You're leaving the opportunity for them to pull money from that commission. And again, I don't necessarily believe, and because I'm not seeing it on my deals. I'm not having lenders tell me that they're going to cut my commission like they may have done back in, say, 2007 or 2008. We're getting the 6%. On deals over that $729,750, we're getting 5%. That's generally what the banks have been paying. I have not had an accepted offer letter come down. I'm just saying about the last year that had any mention of them cutting my commission beyond what it was that I had put on my HUD-1.
Okay. So I'm going to switch gears for a quick moment here and get to an important point. We obviously talked about identifying good short sale prospects and taking a distressed homeowner through a loan modification in order to obtain short sale listings. Well, here's a really important piece. How do we market to these people who are in trouble, and how do we identify them to begin with?
Well, there's a couple of good ways, and I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why I'm on a call today is I've been using Red X's product, as I'm sure many people on the line have. I remember a long time ago actually having conversations saying it would be great if there was a product out there that not only got us the FSBOs and expireds, but if there was a product out there that got us the FSBOs, the expireds, as well as the notice of defaults and list pendants. And Curtis, I don't know if you want to mention something about this, but I know that Red X is now in the process. They actually gave me the opportunity to be a beta tester on it. They actually have a product that's doing that, and that's kind of opened up a whole new window of opportunity.
Yeah, sorry. I will say something in there, Phil, since he gave me the opportunity. It's pretty exciting, and I won't take your time, Phil, on the call, but people can go to www.theredx.com and they can get more information on our new pre-foreclosure product. But essentially, it's exactly what you said, Phil, is that we're going out, we're finding all the notice of defaults, but if you have our expired product and our FSBO product, we're able to cross-check that information against each other to be able to find out if the NOD is already listed on the MLS. So it's a pretty powerful system.
It's and I'll tell you from firsthand experience with it, Curtis, is that it is. And I'm not trying to pump this up as a sales call, but when we talk about the actual marketing, what I'll tell you is that FSBOs and expireds are two of the hottest areas to explore when you're looking to get more listings in general. When you take a FSBO or an expired listing that has recently had a notice of default letter or has had a list pendants filed against them, the opportunity for a listing on that particular property is outrageous. The trick here now is to educate people, to have multiple touches with these people by virtue of direct mail, by the virtue of knocking on the door, by virtue of phone calls for those that have to be called. Another great feature is that you guys at Red X have the do not call alerts on there. These folks, these FSBOs and these they represent what we're going to look back on again as well, just in general in real estate. I always, whenever I teach in any size classroom, it's always been my experience. Towards the end of the day, I'll always ask how many people in the room, forgetting about short sales or foreclosures, I'll always ask how many people in the room work FSBO. And what happens is that usually somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10% of the class will raise their hand. Now, I've done this with 1,000 people in the room, and I've done this with 10 people in the room. And the results are almost always, always, always the same. I had a room with about 10 people in it. This goes back about 6 months ago. And this one woman, she raised her hand. And as I would when, even if there was 1,000 people in a room, I pressed her a little harder. I said, are you sure? Are you sure that you systematically check the for sale by owner list? You contact them, you direct mail them, you call them, whatever it is, however you do it consistently. And what the woman said to me, she goes, well, not really me, but my husband. And the point of the story is simply this. 10% of the people tell me that they work FSBOs. What I find is that 5% do. And it reminded me of a number that I was told when I first got into the real estate business, and that was they told me that 5% of the people make 95% of the money in our real estate industry. It always made me think when I started getting up in front of groups, when I started asking that question, how ironic it was that also 5% of the people are the ones that are really consistently taking advantage of working the for sale by owner list as well as the expired list and turning that into like mega dollars. There's nothing different there when it comes to short sales. The only thing that will be a little bit different is the message that you need to deliver. Okay? And that message has to be something along the lines of being able to offer a service as well as offering them a little bit of education, because the psychology and the fear factor involved with losing your home, and again, if you don't have a lot of experience with dealing with people who have a distressed situation with their finances and their mortgage, you're going to find that usually that mortgage situation represents some much larger problems in their life, and we have to be careful, and we have to find ourselves able to educate them on the real estate transaction and not getting sucked into the rest of the problems, because it becomes like a vacuum. So educating them on how resolving the mortgage challenges that they're having is important. You need to kind of know some of your local, I don't want to say law because I don't want real estate people practicing law. That's not what we're supposed to do, but you just want to have a good idea of what's going on in your area, and you want to be able to offer them some little nuggets of information, nuggets that are going to get them a little bit more excited about working with you, and I find that that's a very, very powerful tool.
Well, that's great, and just as important as marketing, Phil, I assume we need some kind of tool or system that processes and negotiates these short sales and these loan modifications for us, especially since you're saying it's very important to negotiate ourselves in order to keep the commission. What do you use to negotiate and process all the paperwork needed for the short sales and loan modifications?
Well, before I tell you, what I want to tell you is that the short sale negotiating process is 95% nonverbal. Okay, 95% of the entire negotiating process is paperwork. Being someone who's a talker, I like to speak. It kind of sometimes I feel like my hands are tied. I speak with my hands. My hands are moving all the time through the whole. But what I found over the years of successfully negotiating short sales is that the vast majority, like I say, 95% of the process is a nonverbal process. You must put together a powerful short sale proposal and send it out to the bank. You can't be missing a document. It can't be missing a pay stub. You can't say, well, it's just a bank statement. Every single piece of paper is important. The income and expense is important. The HUD-1 is important. The hardship letter is important. All the documents are very important. And then once you have all those documents put together that the bank has asked for, being able to substantiate the proposal that you're sending in becomes the next dynamic and important part of it as well. Like an attorney, when you show up at court and you're defending your client, you want to make sure that you have enough proof, enough evidence to state a case that makes all the sense in the world for the bank to do it. My website is shortsalespeedway.com. On that website, I basically have that process, my nonverbal process. I had to have it turned into some sort of a computer-based portal. This way I can negotiate my short sales wherever I am in the country, running around. And it's kind of an internet-based solution for me. So that's what I use. It just puts all my paperwork in one place and makes my life tremendously easy.
All right, terrific. We're going to pass this back to Curtis at this point, but we want to thank everybody for attending today's call. Phil and I are very appreciative for having the time to speak to you. We hope you found the information we shared insightful. And as Curtis was saying, he'll share our contact information. So if you have any additional questions for us, we'll be glad to assist you further.
Thank you, everybody. I hope we've answered some of your questions. Hope we made you think about a little bit of something extra when it came to short sales. And I hope everybody recognizes the opportunity and takes full advantage of it. Have a great day.
Hey, thanks, Phil and Eric. Just for everybody on the call, again, Phil's website is www.shortsalespeedway.com. And I think people are probably asking, you gave great information, but I think people want to know a little more detail how to get started, you know, what kind of paperwork they have to fill out. Those seem to be some of the questions coming in. And does your website answer those questions if they go there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The website has a lot of education on it. I'm a big believer in the power of, you know, knowing what it is. In my previous business, when I was a contractor and building things, we had guys who were wrenches and we had guys who knew how things work. I think it's so important to actually understand the process and understand how it actually works, because you'll become a better negotiator with these types of transactions by understanding what's going on in the minds of the bank.
Great. So everybody, you can get that information again, www.shortsalespeedway.com. If you have more questions about our new product and the foreclosure product and how it can help you streamline the process, go to www.theredx.com. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call. You can email sales@theredx.com if you have any other questions, and we can get you in touch with Phil or Eric or direct you back to their website. So, again, thank you, everyone. Have a great day.